You're listening to a podcast from 702.
So immigration in South Africa is gaining serious momentum, depending on who you speak to. I did a story with the German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle during the course of last year about this very thing. And consultants in immigration have reported a spike of as much as 70% in new applications. And many are just simply battling to keep up with demand. And another startling thing that they have put forward, at least the consultants I spoke to, was that members of the black community, black South Africans, are wanting to explore the options for leaving as much, in sometimes cases more, than white South Africans. And it's led to immigration consultants battling to keep up with the mere fact that a lot of families are trying to understand what it will take to leave. How exactly do they get the opportunity to move on to what they view as greener pastures, and how exactly do they make that happen? Now, building off of that, we welcome to studio once more Shandu Teron, divorce and matrimonial attorney. He's going to be talking to us about a relocation dispute. Essentially, in an environment where more South Africans are immigrating, it is putting a hell of a lot of strain on marriages, hell of a lot of strains on relationships. And it may well result in one parent wanting to move, leave the country, and take their children with them, with another parent, the other part of the parental unit, essentially trying to block that move. Shandu, good morning and welcome back to 702.
Good morning, Nicholas. How are you?
Always good. Always good. Sun's starting to peer through the clouds once more, and we may be living in an environment where we're hitting a second recession in as many years, but who cares? We're at least here. We're here, and we're here to discuss what we can do about our problems.
I say bring it on. You know, if there's one thing about South Africans that we've proven, and we've proven the world right and wrong, we are so resilient. I say bring it on. Despite the politicians, despite the mismanagement, we are generally quite easy to laugh and of good humor.
Exactly. And if we can't at least learn to laugh, well, maybe we could just get together and cry. But coming back to why you're here, what exactly is a relocation dispute in legal terms?
Well, where it comes in, and where it comes in my line, and I can certainly bear out your figures about that, there's been a spike, because I'm running around like a headless chicken currently with matters like this. It's generally post-divorce, and the internet dating has also brought this on considerably. It's post-divorce where there's already an order that's of court that says, let's say I'm going to take the normal situation, which is about, I'd say, 85-86% of the time, where custody of the minor children has been awarded to the mother. The mother meets the father has, let's call it, the rights of the normal rights of a divorced parent. He sees the children every alternate weekend, and there's a sleepover during the week because they don't live too far apart. Mother meets somebody on the internet, or mother gets a job opportunity, but it's usually mother meets someone on the internet. Now, of course, the relationship has four stages, the last stage being consummation and intimacy. Stages one, two, and three can now happen over the internet. You can really get to know somebody, you can fall in love with them, and communicate extensively. They can have a webcam, you can see the house, you can basically meet them and their friends and their family without physically having met them. And based on that decision, you now want to move. So what happens is there is this court order that says the father has XYZ rights of care and contact of the children, access as we commonly know it. Then the mother now wants to up and take the children with her and move to, and the popular ones currently are Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, and I think I'm missing one, Switzerland and Sweden are also coming up.
Sweden, really?
Switzerland. Well, Sweden's very tough to get in, but yeah. So, but people, these are the places that people want to go to. And the mother now wants to take the children along. So, and I'm looking here at a case. New Zealand has a big problem with this, between New Zealand and Australia. Mother meets somebody in Australia, wants to take the children to New Zealand. And even though it's just a 4 or 5 hour flight, depending where you go, the father ends up from seeing the children possibly every day and taking them to school in the mornings to see them 2 to 3 times a year. And the chief judges, the chief justice of New Zealand, Judge Boshier, he said why this is so difficult for the court. He says that cases like this involve two competent and committed parents, one with sound reasons for wishing to relocate and the other with valid reasons to resist the application. And generally, what are the reasons for wanting to relocate? And I'm quoting again from this court case. The availability of attractive employment opportunities for the resident parent and the new spouse. The loss of confidence in the country's economy. Now, if that doesn't apply to our country, then nothing does.
Exactly.
The escalating crime rate. Guess what? Better education opportunities for the children. and just what they feel is a lack of family and maintenance support in their current environment. And that's also true, by the way. So, and then this person now wants to up and go. Now, the father says, well, that's good and well. Why don't you go? But the children are staying because what you're going to ask me to do is to hug a webcam, and you won't agree to that. And guess what? Neither will I. Now, if I can just run along a little bit, there's a couple of people I rely heavily on in disputed relocation matters. Two people, actually. You know, I think it's Abraham Lincoln that said he's not so intelligent, but the intelligent thing that he does is he surrounds himself with very intelligent people. Now, there's two very intelligent people that I surround myself with.
Indeed.
One, and we're like a team. I call us the dream team normally in disputed relocations. It's Advocate Michelle van Nieuwenhuizen, who I call Mighty Mouse. She's about 5'2" and afraid of nothing. I'm not afraid of many things being an ex-professional soldier, but I'm afraid of her, and she's afraid of nothing. And then there's also Dr. Martin Strauss, who's an expert on the field of disputed relocations and the best interests of the child standard, which is sort of the standard that the courts are supposed to apply. They don't always, but they try. And he says, and in this article, I'm sitting with his article here, Dr. Martin Strauss, Relocation, Relationship and Risk. And we often say that this panacea, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, they have lower crime rates, therefore it will be in the child's best interest to relocate. But he looks at this empirically, and he states the following. He says, when a child relocates, there are great, great risks to this child, okay? And he says that the children, when they relocate, they take a dip in school performance. They sometimes, because they're an outcast in the new environment, they start running with the wrong crowd, and they are vulnerable. Basically, they are vulnerable. And he said there are general risk factors for long-term behavioral outcomes. The child can develop into a problem child, poor academic performance, school dropout rates, drug and alcohol abuse, premarital childbearing, and a variety of behavioral problems. Now, this is children that they've tracked who have relocated in various countries. And these factors seem to be common. And they say when the adverse effect of a disrupted parent-child relationship on child's development, adjustment, and educational attainment are empirical. You can see them. So to say that, oh, but Canada has a lower crime rate, therefore it's in the child's best interest to relocate, isn't always true. And the factors for that is, let's look at the child here. Here the child is living. Yeah, this country isn't perfect. Let's not sugarcoat on what's going on. We have real problems. However, over here, the child has both parents. The child has both his grandparents. The child has both sets of aunts and uncles and cousins. The child have his school friends, and the child has the environment that he knows. All that rug is getting ripped out from under that child. Ripped out. And now the child has got to go to a new environment, and we don't know if the child is going to be bullied there, if the child is going to start running with the wrong crowd, which often happens because the child now has to come into a school and make friends quickly and adjust. The child doesn't know the environment, doesn't know the socially acceptable rules. Things are different there. So the child, there are risks involved. And this argument of, oh, well, the crime rate's lower there, therefore everything will be hunky-dory, doesn't always hold track. And that's where the dispute now comes in.
Shandra Duran in studio with us here on the Eusebius Makeza Show. Niklas Bauer with you until midday. Get your calls in if you are perhaps in the midst of a disputed relocation, if you're divorced, if you are getting divorced and there is talk of your former spouse, your soon-to-be divorced spouse, taking your kids with them to another country in the midst of the immigration wave here in South Africa. Give us a call, 011-883-0702. We're talking about disputed relocations with Shandra Duran. And Shandra, you've painted a picture where it's fathers that have to deal with this a lot of the time. And I understand, you know, if you just look at the figures, you're not talking just stereotypes. This is what happens in the overwhelming majority. But I'm supposing this happens as well with your mothers fighting disputed relocations.
Well, I have a number of mothers that I do represent. But in this case, I'm representing the mothers who want to relocate overseas. I'm not so much trying to frustrate the relocation. And that's just a follow-on fact of the fact that in most cases, custody, for better or for worse, gets awarded to the mothers. And you and I have done a number of shows about this, I think. And that the courts are very sort of archaic in their thinking about the roles of mothers and fathers. And so they should be. The courts should be conservative and slow to change. But the courts, a lot of times the courts are sort of trapped in the sort of institutional memory of the roles of mothers and fathers. And if a child is young, Then generally custody gets awarded to the mothers. And it's generally the mother that meets someone new and wants to move away. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had situations where fathers have also moved away. And then there's also been some form of a dispute, but it was more in relation to how is he going to meet his maintenance commitments, you know, sitting somewhere else, or how is the, him now wanting the children to go overseas and visit them, what checks and balances do I have that if he now says, no, but I'm not bringing the children back?
What do you have also, to fall back on?
Which is also a problem, by the way. So nobody is sitting here and saying both sexes don't do terrible things to each other. But I'm just saying from my current disputed relocation, it is generally the father, generally, not always, the father who tries to stop it, and generally the mother who wants to go. But I have, there is, even though there's an asymmetry there, I've certainly had it the other way around too, by the way.
Just before we move on to our first call here, Daniel is calling in to discuss the disputed relocations. Does it matter, just out of interest, what judge you come before, whether or not it's a male or a female, in terms of granting custody to either the mother or the father?
Well, I'm not going to take a career-limiting move, and I'm going to be a typical lawyer, and I'm going to say it shouldn't matter.
Okay, fair enough. But I should imagine at the end of the day, we do have a very, very strong judiciary that is known for its objectivity. But at the end of the day, you know, people do inhabit those robes that decide on court outcomes.
Well, absolutely. Look, the uncertainty of the law is why you need an attorney or why do you need legal counsel. If I'm a medical professional and in South Africa, I cut someone's hand open and then I go to Canada and I cut someone's hand open, I'm going to find pretty much the same things. But in any Western court system, I can have the same facts, sometimes even the same presiding officer, and have completely different outcomes. And I've had that before, by the way. The bottom line is those judicial officers are people just like you and I. And we are not thinking beings that feel. We are feeling beings that think once in a while. We are driven by emotion, hormones, and your values and your preferences and your prejudices are a result of your life experiences. And even identical twins don't have similar life experiences. Who's to say that person sitting there on the bench did not lose their children? Who's to say that person sitting there on the bench is not receiving enough maintenance from the father of the children? And now you're in front of them with a maintenance matter. I'm not telling me that that person can be so removed from reality that they are insulated against the normal struggles we all have. They have to pay the bills. They have to go to work. They have to sit in traffic. They have to read the terrible headlines about femicide and who knows what else. I refuse to believe that they are so exalted that it doesn't affect them. It affects us all.
So coming back to the basic fundamentals of a relocation dispute, all right, the relocation of parent and child. Who has more rights? I mean, if there is a court order already given saying that, okay, based on the facts in front of me, I hereby grant full custody to the mother with healthy visitation rights to the father, based on a pre-existing court order, will the mother, for instance, in this case, the one that wants to relocate, pursue interests elsewhere other than South Africa, will they be on a better legal footing to try and pursue this relocation?
Okay, well, the yardstick is as follows. The yardstick should be the best interest of the child. And sometimes, as in, you know, I've had a discussion, lengthy discussion about this before, that the maternal preference and the tender years preference, which are exactly what they say, if a child is young, it should be with a mother, those preferences which should not exist in our law, sometimes the best interest of the child gets substituted for those preferences. They think it's automatically the best interest for the child if the young child is with a mother. Not always true. I think each situation should be looked at best or on their own merits. However, possession is 9/10 of the law. And if the child has been living with the mother, has been fed, has been attending school, and is getting along okay, then the fathers who want to frustrate or stop that move, the deck is stacked against them. Does that mean we are not, does that mean we, fathers are not willing these cases? No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm part of the movement that where fathers are saying we refuse to be second-class citizens in our children's life. The Constitution states very clearly you cannot discriminate based on gender, and neither should you. Now, if the Constitution states it And both parents have full parental rights and responsibilities. Well, then full should mean equal. If you have full rights and I have full rights, well, it's not a leap of faith or logic to state that I have equal rights. Yet the courts are translating equal rights into, in a 2-week cycle, I can see my children 2, maybe 3 days. Well, I don't think it's very equal, and neither do many fathers out there. And this translates into this custody or into this disputed relocation battles.
We'll get to your calls after the news headlines at 10:30. If you just joined us, Shandaz Ron leading us through relocation disputes as more South Africans are considering emigration from the country. Very pertinent topic there. The best interests of the child. I mean, that essentially what it hinges on. If you are experiencing something similar, maybe you're in the midst of a relocation dispute, drop us a WhatsApp voice note to 072-702-1702. Otherwise, you want to stay anonymous, you can drop us an SMS 31702, and we will get to your calls on 011-883-0702 in a short while. Speak to me like I'm a 5-year-old without laughing.
Six and a
half. You know, how do you argue what is in the best interests of a child? Break that down to me. I mean, you spoke about the stability that one has if you have family members, your friends, you know, that social environment around you already, a kid cocooned in that, so to speak. But what are the different things that determine in a judge's eyes that this is going to be in the child's best interest?
Well, Section 7 of the Children's Act sets it out quite clearly. But before I get to the sort of the minutiae of what that says, the principles you can extrapolate out of this is that it is quite known that the environment that children flourish in is one of stability, predictability, emotional and physical support, and one where their physical needs are met, not hungry, not cold, and they don't feel alone. So those are the principles, and whichever can give them the best that. Now, in Section 7 of the Children's Act, it says the following, and I'm going to sort of brush through it. The nature of the personal relationship between the child and the specific parents. The attitude of the parents towards the child and the exercise of parental responsibilities and rights. And here's the important one, the likely effect on the child of any child change in the child's circumstances, including the separation from either parents or a sibling. And the practical, here's the other important one in relocation disputes, the practical difficulty and expense of the child having contact with the parents or any specific parent. Obviously, now we're talking plane tickets, flight tickets, visas, passports, etc. And also the need for the child to remain in care of his or her parents, family, and extended family, and to maintain connection with that family. Also then, the voice of the child according to the age, maturity, stage of development, and gender. And then there's the more nefarious ones, the cultural development, disability that the child may have, a chronic illness that they may suffer from. But those are the main ones. You know, what effect will it have on this child to have the rug ripped out from under him and to go live in a place with a lower crime rate or where there's more stability for him? The current thing is that it is often stated in the cases that I deal with that it states that yes, the child is now going to the land of milk and honey, whether it be Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Things are so much better there.
What are they basing that on? Are they basing it just strictly on what? GDP per capita, crime rate you mentioned a bit earlier on. What's the most deciding factor that that the wanting to immigrate parents puts before the court?
A day in the life of the child, how that would look compared to here. The fact that we're not in a double recession. The fact crime rate obviously is phenomenally big. And a lot of times the parents themselves are immigrating have been victims of vicious crime. So you can't tell them, oh, it's not real. I had a case the other day where a woman in the last 3 years has been hijacked 6 times. In this area, and no one's been arrested. And and at least twice, I think it was, by people in police uniforms. So let's just leave it at that. So you can't now tell that person, oh, but listen, you know, your life won't be as good in Australia. Just from that point of view, I think it may be better. So it's the crime, the economy, better prospects, what that country can offer the child, free university education without the universities being burnt down. Just the options that is available to the child. Let's say the child immigrates to Spain or to London. The whole of Europe is open to them. It's a two-hour flight to France or Belgium. These are not things that a child will have when they're here. America and other places are also much closer. So what it can offer the child, especially when the child goes to university, the standard medical services that are offered there are not bad compared to the state hospitals here. So it's a trade-off. The child loses their support structure of, they lose the one parent basically for practical sense, and they lose the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles, their friends at school, and an environment that they know. And that's a heavy loss. That's a heavy loss. But what they gain on the other side, and as far as the opportunities they gain and how the world opens up for them again, is also can't be denied. And that's where the older the child is, the voice of the child is more important. And that's where they ask the child, but what do you want?
I'd like to unpack that in the second part of this. Shanda Tron leading us through the minute details of a relocation dispute. When parents want to move, they want to take their children with them overseas. What does it all mean? We'll be taking your calls next on the USABIS Makeza Show.
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This
is 702
for the curious.
Shanda Tron in studio with myself, Niklas Bauer, matrimony and divorce attorney, talking to us about disputed relocations. Let's talk to Daniel in Johannesburg. Daniel.
Hello.
Yes, Daniel.
Hi there. Niklas, yeah. Interesting point and a fascinating topic. I think for many people, serendipitous. I'll give you an example as a case study. A lot of people tend to, attorneys often frame the dispute, what is actually parental alienation. They frame it as a dispute between two parties, squabbling parents. I've been at this for 7 years now, in high courts, regional courts, children's court, maintenance court. Where one parent can get targeted and pretty much wiped out financially. And I fought a six-year battle to get access, fully unrestricted access to my daughter, which had been created by lies, basically, after a psychologist had said, yes, we must share 50-50. Anyway, I finally got that access. And as I applied for it, the unrestricted access, I was doing this by myself without lawyers. I'd run out of money at that stage. My ex then decided to relocate. She applied to relocate to Johannesburg. And I arrived right 8 months later, trying to set up everything where I'd been making my work environment down there. Got here. 3 months later, then they announced that apart from suing me for various things to keep me busy and totally occupied and unable to work because I had to answer these things, then they said they're going to apply to relocate to Switzerland. And that was one of the countries.
Daniel, what's the timeline on this? How long ago is this?
So it's 1 year. It took from the relocation. So January 2019, the mother arrived with my children in Johannesburg. And 10 months later, when I was here, they were saying, okay, well, then they are going to relocate because I'm not earning enough money.
And Daniel, what's the situation now? Are you in the midst of this relocation dispute or have they left?
I am. No, they haven't. And being without money is a problem. I've just got pro bono representation. But it's a lot of the points that were being raised are so relevant. And I had something, I'd wanted to say about it. Because, the children being fed and clothed. I mean, when we were together, we did all this stuff together. But that's not just enough by itself. The psychological and emotional abuse of children is so much longer lasting, as records show, than even physical abuse. And when children are basically emotionally bullied, and this particular woman is on record as having done it to her older son from another marriage in New Zealand, then you have to wonder, do the courts even look at that stuff?
All right, Daniel, let's get Shanda to respond there. Thank you for being brave and sharing your story there. And look, I've never got divorced, thankfully, but I am the product of a divorced you know, marriage that ended up in divorce. And yeah, I can say wholeheartedly, Shandu, I mean, it's the children that are often in the firing line when it comes to messy divorces, when it comes to relocations. And I know fully well what happens when you get used as a pawn. Ah, your father hasn't done this. Ah, well, your mother did this, you know?
Well, Nicholas, to get divorced, you have to get married first. So I reckon you're safe there for now. Ka-ching. But the bottom line is, Daniel, I know what you're going through, and I can say that you are not alone. A lot of times, parental alienation really, really goes with that, in that you have a target parent and an alienating parent. And the definition of parental alienation is that your children have a good relationship with you, and then the other parent sabotages that. And the other parent makes the children believe that, one, you don't really love them, that two, only they really love the children, and surreptitiously and very dangerously, if they should have a good time with you or be with you or come back happy from you, it would negatively affect their relationship with the with a parent who is doing the alienation. So it's really, the children are put in a tough position as well, and I know what you're going through. I'm working very, very hard that in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, which is very abused, probably the most abused piece of legislation in our country, I want parental alienation as an act of domestic violence. And there are places in the world where parental alienation is a criminal act, such as Mexico. But obviously it's very, very hard to prove, because parents alienate their children in ways they don't even know about. If, for instance, I am angry at my ex-spouse and I'm standing talking on the phone to my friend and I am letting it rip on what a terrible person my ex-spouse is, and can you believe she's doing this, and my child overhears that, it will affect my child. So they already, I'm guilty of an act of parental alienation.
All right, let's go to Rachel in Bedford View. Rachel.
Hi, morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Rachel.
Great, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I need some guidance, please. My son is 15 years old. His father skipped the country in December 2018, possibly January 2019. He pays no money whatsoever. He has no contact. I believe he's living in Ireland. We have no address details for him. We had a phone number, but he's blocked both my son and I on WhatsApp. So there is absolutely no form of communication. I would desperately like to get sole custody of my child, but that needs to go by the High Court. So instead, what I did last year was I went to the Germs and Children's Court and I tried to flip it around. And instead of getting full custody, what I tried to do was to remove certain rights and responsibilities from the father. The father's lawyer popped up. He had money to pay for that type of thing. The father's lawyer arrived, and I don't believe that the legal system is fair, and that if you're unrepresented, that they hear you, the magistrates hear you as well as they hear a lawyer. And he was able to say to them that they would take away the father's rights and responsibilities in terms of everything that pertains to money. So therefore, I can make any choice in terms of schooling, medical aid, et cetera, but I have to take full responsibility for that. However, he refuses to give rights to apply for a new passport or to allow travel out of the country. And if we want to do anything like that, we have to track the father down in Ireland and ask for his permission.
Rachel, once again, timeline. How long has the father been absent? Absconded,
so
even?
He skipped in about December 2018. So it's a year... and that's going on a year and a half, something like that. So he pays nothing. There is absolutely no contact. We've been divorced since 2011. It's been a very acrimonious divorce all along. And now this is the situation. And the South African law actually tends to, in some bizarre way, favor the people who skip the country or who are not around to the child's detriment. So if my child is selected for a sports tour, for instance, and we need to get his signature to let him travel out of the borders of South Africa, we now have to go and find him in Ireland and try and get him to give authority. It's not fair. He's absconded. He has no involvement whatsoever. Yet, in the eyes of the law, he has full parental rights. Mm.
Rachel, let's let Shandu respond to that. Thank you very much for being brave and sharing your story with us. It sounds absolutely horrendous. I don't know, man. What does the law say there? Because I tell you what, emotionally, how I feel about that, Father. But what is the law? Why is the law protecting this guy?
Well, the law is not protecting this guy, but you have to enforce your rights. So, Rachel, what would I do if I was your lawyer? Well, firstly, I'd go to maintenance court. I'd get a warrant of arrest against him for arrear maintenance. So if he steps foot in this country again, there's a nice little state paid vacation waiting for him in a nice little jail cell. Well, he can explain to Bubba and 15 of his best friends why he hasn't been paying maintenance. And so that's the first thing I do. I'd get a warrant of arrest against him in the maintenance court. So if he steps foot in this country again, he gets arrested. Secondly, once I have that warrant of arrest, I would then apply to the children's court in terms of Section 28 to terminate his rights and to show that he's in arrears with maintenance and he doesn't give a flying hoot. Furthermore, I'd also approach the court in terms of Section 18.3 to give you a loan signing power on whatever documentations need to be signed. So the law is there. Unfortunately, you've got to enforce it. So
I tried. I mean, I spent 8 months at Jermyn Court going back and forth every month sitting in front of the magistrate, reading all 305 pages or whatever it is of the Children's Act doing this. And because his lawyer is a bully, they managed to just get the magistrate to remove the rights that has a financial implication, a negative financial implication towards him, and give me all those responsibilities, but hang on to the one that caused the most anxiety.
Yes, what they did was they were trying to remove his Section 18, 18C right or 18D right to contribute to the maintenance of the child. I would do it the other way around. Look, Rachel, you obviously try to do this without an attorney, or that's what it sounds like to me. And it's tough if you come up against a seasoned attorney. And that attorney on the other side, in their own defense, that attorney isn't being briefed and being paid to be nice to you. He is being briefed and being paid to, he's got a mandate from his client. He's got to perform in terms of that mandate. Those are his instructions. And we as attorneys are prisoners of our instructions, by the way. So if that attorney wasn't nice to you or didn't give you what you want, well, that's not why I was being paid to be there, number one. Number two is, if you are serious about this, there are many, many, many good attorneys who can help you get this. Bottom line is, it's how much justice can you afford?
We're going to get to Charles and Ravonia as well as Robinson in four ways. But before we do, Kaiser in Bryanston, thank you very much for patiently waiting on the line. Kaiser, are you there?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Kaiser. Please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to know, is it always the case of the parents deciding on what's best for the child, or the law also protects the child? For example, if the child is young, and they can't decide for themselves. And you know, the wife, I think she's divorcing the wife, and she's planning to move out of the country. And obviously, she's not working. And also, the child cannot decide for the mother as to whether to stay. He or she can be taken care of. So then, how does the law interfere into that? Because the child is still young, cannot decide as to where to depend on the parent. But then, if the wife decides to leave the country, and as a father, I know that since she's leaving the country, she's not working, and she cannot be able to take care of the child. Then what happens in that case?
Okay, Kaiser, the first thing that the law looks at is what's in the best interest of the child. Now, if the one parent clearly cannot look after the child, then there's a good case to be made out that it's in the best interest for the child to go to the other parent. If both parents can't look after the child, then the courts look at the grandparents or extended family or brothers and sisters. But those people have to step up and say to the court, listen, you know, we can step into the shoes of the parents in the interim while they sort themselves out. But the bottom line is someone has got to step up to the plate, or if no one steps up to the plate, well, that's when social services step in, and they will remove the child from either parent if nobody wants to take care of the child. The bottom line is for her to leave the country, she needs the signature of the other parent. She needs an affidavit of consent of the other parent. If she doesn't have that, then they are not going to let her leave the ports of entry unless she's got a fake death certificate.
All right. No, thank you.
So she can't leave.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure, Kaiser. Thank you very much for the call. Lines are open. 011-883-0702. It's the Eusebius Mckayser Show. Niklas Bayer filling in for Eusebius. I'm in studio with Shando Tzaron, divorce and matrimonial attorney. We're talking about relocation disputes. If a child is the subject of a custody battle when two parents have gotten divorced and the one wants to relocate, what are the ins and outs of that? Charles and Ravonia, good morning.
Hi, Nicholas, and so I'm Mr. Guest's first name.
Shondo.
Shondo. Yeah, no, it's a mouthful, Charles. I wasn't there when my parents gave it to me.
What's it? S-H-A-N-D-O.
You spell it with difficulty.
Yeah. Yeah, my question is, you know, what I go, you know, I've got a little boy, he's 8 years old, and when my ex approached me to take him out of the country to the south of England, I just signed in the bottom line. I just thought it's going to be the best thing for my son. But now what happens is, you know, she doesn't conform to the agreement, which was, you know, I would be able to speak to him at least twice a week via WhatsApp video call. What's my recourse? And she's in the UK. I can't afford to take her on legally. Like, what do I do?
Okay, well, Charles, here's the thing. I can tell you what I would have done if I was your attorney. And of course, it's now sort of, you know, closing the stable doors after the horse has bolted. But if I represent a client where we agree to relocation, then one of the basic things that we do, and this is at the other party's cost, is that if we get a court order here that says the liberal rights, the phone calls.
I've got a hard court order.
I would make sure that order gets reciprocally granted in the court over there. So then it's so much easier to enforce that order because it's already granted in the courts over there. So I will insist that the order is granted here, that very same order is granted in the court there. So what are you to do now?
Okay, but now that, as you said, the horse is bolted to the stable.
There is something you can do, though.
She doesn't answer my WhatsApp messages, and the few times that I have phoned her, then she'll say, oh, sorry, I've only got 5% battery left in my phone, or she puts iPad in the little guy's lap. I mean, the guy's 8 years old. What's he going to choose? Speaking to me in playing games on the iPad.
Yeah, it's insidious. I know what you're going through. Look, the bottom line is you can get that order enforced. You've got a brief an attorney here, that brief's an attorney over there. We get the order enforced. And once you have that, well, then you've got a bit of stick to beat you around. But once again, it's how much justice can you afford? It does cost money.
Are there countries where it's easier to enforce a South African court order to get the child back there?
Let me do it the other way around. Are there countries where it's near impossible? Yes. There are countries where you have an agreement, a reciprocal enforcement of orders agreement signed with a number of countries, and that's most of your Western countries. Where I'm having real problems is with your Arab Emirates countries, your Bahrains, your Saudis and that. Where our orders mean nothing and they won't look at it. And that there, it's very, very difficult. I have been busy with a matter now where such liberal visitation rights was agreed to with my client. And we said to the court, but we are quite concerned because should they go to Saudi and then they just decide, well, sorry, we're not bringing the children. There's nothing we can do. Oh, and the other side convinced the court, but no, we'll pay for plane tickets twice a year. And guess what?
All came to naught.
Nothing.
We're listening to you. Go to 702.co.za.
Indeed, you are listening to us in 702 for the curious. We're talking about disputed relocation. Shondo Theron, matrimonial lawyer and divorce lawyer, divorce attorney in studio with us now. Let's go to the lines. You've been patiently waiting for us there. Robinson in Four Ways. Good morning.
Hi, morning, guys. My name's Oric, actually. It's spelled also difficultly. O-R-R-O-C-K, the founder of an organization called Children Need Both Parents that fights for the rights of access of fathers to their kids. Firstly, I'd like to start off by saying that we tend to sort of excuse the judiciary in South Africa somehow when it comes to family law, and they pretend to not understand or even contemplate the existence of parental alienation syndrome. We are not conservative in our judiciary approach, but we are archaic. In other words, we are 50 years behind the first world in the application of PAS. PAS has already been registered as the World Health Organization as a list of quantifiable diseases, which then leads me to how parental alienation syndrome affects relocation. In my organization, I get emails and phone calls literally dozens a day from fathers around the country who are combating relocation. The relocation from an alienating parent, in other words, a person suffering from parental alienation syndrome, is a legitimate and planned attack, and it is the final nail in the coffin to ultimately you not seeing your children again. We can speak about the possibility of trying to fight international laws. By the time fathers have got to this point, they are usually bankrupt. So the planned bankruptcy and attack by clever attorneys and lawyers promote parental alienation syndrome through relocation. As Shando said earlier, the beginning stages of parental alienation syndrome in South Africa are the abuse of the Domestic Violence Act. I myself have been suffered the attacks of three interim protection orders, all dismissed in my favor. Ultimately, the result of that is that you don't see your child for a year. Then you wait another year for the family advocate's report and then possibly another 6 months for the High Court. By that time, as Shando said, maternal preference, archaic, it's not even conservative, it's archaic, is applied. And in many cases, by the time you get to the point of relocation, you haven't seen your kid for 3 or 4 years anyway. And the judge is going to rubber stamp the fact that basically the best interests of the child are to stay with the mother. But what is not recognized in many of these cases is that parental alienation syndrome is at play. And as far as I'm concerned, we are nowhere, absolutely nowhere, in identifying and spotting it. We do not have a psychological or psychiatric industry or organization in this country that even recognizes parental alienation syndrome.
All right.
Which means that fathers can't... Yes, sir.
All right, let's get Shanda to respond there. Thank you very much for your call.
Arok, I could not agree with you more. You know what? You and I have sat actually in my office and gone through this and looked at the tragic number of cases where people are pleading with you saying, help us, help us, help us. And it's fathers that's being denied their children for no good reason. And the courts are incredibly slow to act. And the financial burden of enforcing your rights, even though you have those rights, is crippling. Just the way the Children's Act, you and I were discussing, just the way the Children's Act is written, in Section 21, you can be a heroin addict mother, but if you gave birth to a child, you have automatic parental rights and responsibilities. However, you can be the father of that child, an accountant and a taxpayer, but we have to go to court and prove that you've earned your parental rights and responsibilities. And furthermore, the issue of parental alienation, I think... And you and I have had this discussion in person. I think one of the ways to solve this is to make parental alienation an act of domestic violence. I think that would bring a bit of equity in the way that the protection orders in the Domestic Violence Act is applied by our courts.
All right, let's go to Nhlanhla in Soweto. Lucky, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Very well. Go ahead, Nhlanhla.
I just have a question. After our separation... we were married customarily. After the separation, the child was always staying with the mother. So we had agreed that when she's older, we'll fetch her so that we then be normal parents. But then that time never came through. So now the child is there with the mother. She is in the same province as me, but the child is in the other province. For some reason, I'm of the belief, or I think I was told that uprooting the child won't be in their best interest. So I just want to double check that fact, because I hardly ever see my child. But financially, I'm expected to be there, which I don't have a problem. My work, I'm there. The other day, I was asking her, how much do you contribute for the child's upbringing? She refuses to tell me how much she gives her. But yet, I'm sure it's not a secret how much I'm giving, because I'm sending it directly to the mother's account. So such things, and it's new, this point you've just raised now, parental alienation syndrome. I don't know if I'm really suffering from it, but yeah, now I've learned something else as well. I'll listen over there with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Nhlanhla.
Nhlanhla, your problem is quite common, where fathers are expected to pay and pay and pay and pay. However, their access or their contact with their children is frustrated. Now, you're asking, is it good for a child to be uprooted? Well, we're going to have to sit and look at the facts of the case. If we tell a story of the day in the child's life, that day in the child's life with you or a day in the child's life with a mother? Which story is the best story? And that's what it's going to come down to. In your environment, does he have contact with family? Does he have good medical care? Are you there? Do you emotionally support them? What would happen to the child if you were sick? Would there be a living nanny? What about your new partner? Will she love your child? So what we have to look at is we have to look at the facts of each situation, and we have to look at a day in the life of the child, a 7-day cycle, including weekends. Are you guys going to go to church on a Sunday? What do you do? What is your normal activities? And whoever tells the best story, whichever story is in the child's best interest, that is your departure point.
Wish we had another hour to unpack this very contentious topic, especially as more South Africans consider relocating. What does that mean for divorced parents? What does it mean for the children of marriages that have resulted in divorce? Interesting time, as always, with you, Shandu. How can people get a hold of you? How can people find out more information, especially the ones that couldn't manage to get through today?
Well, I'm going to do something that you always tell me don't do. I'm going to give up my cell phone number, and I'm going to do it regardless.
All right. Be brave.
Yeah. It's 082 0828195675, 0828195675. WhatsApp me, and to the eight people that have just phoned me, I'm still on air. This is a live show. Thank you. Or you can try www.divlaw, as in the first three letters of divorce law, divlaw.co.za, www.divlaw.co.za, or WhatsApp me on my cell phone. And if you're phoning me right now, I am still on air. Thank you.
Shana Tyrone in studio with us for that hour there.